I want to welcome everybody to the Prophet Scholar Podcast. I have with me today Mike Riddle, a founder of Wonderful Creation Ministry. And so, Mike, how you doing? It's good to see you.
We're doing just fine out here in Boise, Idaho area.
Boise, Idaho. What's the temperature out there today? I meant to ask you.
We're in the low 40s as our high.
Low 40s is the high. Yeah, yeah. We'll be out there in a couple of weeks to see you. So needs good to warm up before I get there, man.
Yes.
Well, we're glad to have you, Mike. And you and I have known each other now for, I think it's about, I don't know, 16, 17 years, I think, probably.
Right on that, yes.
Since you called me that first time out of the blue on my cell phone.
Yes.
And sought me out. So it's great to see you again. Why don't you just tell everybody a little bit about yourself, your background, and then we can talk a little bit about your ministry. You know, just give everybody a thumbnail of who you are and what you're doing.
Well, God's been very good to me since I grew up a non-believer and believed in evolution and went to secular high schools, secular universities, and bought into everything there. But got saved at the age of 30. And that was due to one man witnessing me 7 years earlier, 7 years earlier.
Wow.
And
7 years.
It was in a gymnasium he witnessed to me.
Yeah.
And I walked away from him, ignored everything he had to say. I had no room in my life for God. Things were going pretty well. I had a good job. I was in computers at the time. Also had a stint 6 years in the United States Marine Corps as a captain and had that. And also I had a stint as an athlete. So I always tell people I used to be an athlete. Something happens to you when you get older.
I think that's true for a lot of us.
Yeah, the stopwatch never agrees with me anymore. But anyway, I got saved at age 30. And started going around asking people about evolution. Found a pattern. They had a lot of wonderful stories, but nobody, even the scientists, couldn't give me definitive answers. I could see right through what they were saying. They didn't have any empirical science to support what they were saying.
And so you didn't necessarily have any, did you have a lot of scientific background at that time? So you knew things yourself, or are you just trying to get answers from them?
I was trying to get answers there. I knew some things because my background is mathematics and I had physics and all those kind of courses. Because those are the things I liked. Physics, so I could be a better coach. My coaching is physics and biomechanics, learning how to use the body effectively. So I had all that principles. But biology, everybody takes biology. Most everybody takes it. So you learn nothing but evolution.
Right, sure.
So I could see that they just had stories. So when I was saved, I started reading the Bible. Hmm. I found out.
Imagine Genesis, that.
Yes, it could be an anomaly to some churches, but no, I saw there's a big difference between what was in Genesis and what I was taught in the schools, and soon found out what I was taught in the schools was simply not true. It couldn't be. And I found out evolution is scientifically impossible. I don't care how many degrees you have and how much so-called scientific evidence you have. It does not match the observable evidence.
Okay.
So I didn't go into any theistic evolution. I took Genesis for what it said, that God created everything in 6 little days. No compromise here.
Yeah.
And just started reading it. And wife and I started going to church. And it made a difference in our life and our marriage and our children, grandchildren. And soon we have a 8-month-old great-grandchild and her life too.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. So you started reading the Bible and that's what caused you to say something's not adding up here?
Right.
And then you ask scientists, explain this to me. You weren't getting good answers, and you would read the Bible, and you're like, this is pretty clear what it says.
Yes.
And so trying to make the two come together in your mind, just
can't do that
without distorting. You had to distort the whole Bible. So how did you get into? I know at one point you worked for Answers in Genesis a long time, the ministry that built the Ark and the Creation Museum.
Yes.
How did you get with them, and how long were you with them?
Well, actually, I started out with the Institute for Creation Research.
Okay, ICR.
I didn't know anything about its existence, but went to a seminar, and there were some of their people speaking. And then I decided, being a computer, I'm going to contact these people. Because I can write a program that will do what they just taught me on computers.
Really?
Okay. Put it online for people.
So that's how you got to them. That's how you've gotten in contact with the Creation Ministries, if you will.
Yep, they invited me down to speak, and they forgot I was coming down. It was a couple months later I was supposed to come down. I paid my way down there, and they forgot I was down there. Ended up spending the whole day together, and before I left, they wanted me to start speaking or teaching for them.
Really? And so that was on creation, or was that on something computers?
On creation.
Okay, so you had studied it. You had studied it very thoroughly. You knew it well then. Okay.
Because I had to, before I went down there, I started taking a, what you call a correspondence course. Now, this is the old days correspondence.
Yep.
They send a little track, a little tape about this big.
Yep.
And you listen to it.
Yep.
And then you try to remember what they said.
Yep. Yep.
Then
I remember those. I did some of those too.
Mail it back to them. It was the old days. And I liked it so much that at one point, about 2 a.m. in the morning, I woke up and told my wife, I still had a pretty good job at Microsoft at the time before they got political, too political.
Yeah.
But I had a very good job there, good pay, doing really well. And at 2 a.m. in the morning, woke up and told my wife, I'm leaving Microsoft. Well, that's kind of a shocker. Said, I don't know when, but I have to leave Microsoft. I need to do this creation ministry as my life.
Yeah.
Didn't take long. And I found out I had to leave and left and continued consulting for a while because of the information I knew.
Right.
And I could get as much money as I wanted consulting.
Wow.
It was, I could just have the money rolling in. But I did a year of that and said, that's enough of that. I can't do both.
Right. And it's hard. It's hard.
Creation ministry full time and left everything behind.
And so did you go to work for ICR right away?
Yeah. Actually, at that point? An adjunct for them.
Okay.
And what we did for them is we did what were called loop tours. We go to a different state in the country for a whole month, and we'd have all these places to go. They'd have it all set up ahead of time. All these churches we'd go in schools to speak in every day for a whole month, a different church or churches and schools. 30 straight days we did that. We did 19 of those 1 month tours.
Goodness.
We got afterwards.
I can't even imagine that. I don't think that exists anymore, does it? I mean, people don't travel like that anymore.
No, it was a wonderful experience because you never knew what to expect the next day.
I'll bet.
And we learned a lot. We saw a lot of people. People got to know us.
Yeah, I got a lot of questions probably.
Oh,
I had to do a lot more research to further your knowledge, build up all that knowledge that you're probably still using, I would think.
Yes, we even got into some secular universities, got into NASA to teach there.
Wow.
And those were great experiences right there.
What a foundation.
Because you're in the fire. You're right in the battleground when you go to places like that. So I learned how to handle myself and never get angry, be a good listener, and give good answers.
Yep. Ask questions.
Yes.
Don't try and answer a question if you don't know the answer.
Yes,
you know, don't try and pull the wool over on somebody.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Yeah, when those stopped, then the Answers in Genesis gave me a call. And they came to visit, to see me, and said, would you like to be a speaker for us?
Wow.
And my normal tactic here is I don't just say yes. I say, well, I need to come back and interview Ken Ham. I want to see if he's on board.
Okay.
Yes, he's always been on board.
Yeah.
But I wanted to just make 100% sure. For instance, when we first moved to Washington, went to a church, filled out a little form and said, I'd like to have some people come visit me.
Oh, yeah.
So one evening, two gentlemen came, knocked on the door. We're going to talk to me about the church before they could open their mouth. Said, I got 10 questions for you. If you answer them right, I'm coming to your church.
So how long were you? They were shocked at that, I'm sure.
Yes, they
were. How long were you at Answers in Genesis?
A little over 5 years.
Five. Okay. I thought you were there longer than that. 5 years.
Yes, almost 6 years. And then Ken Ham and I talked, and he knew what my heart was. We wanted to train others how to speak and teach. Now, that's not necessarily what Answers in Genesis does. They get the word out there. They do speak and teach.
Yeah.
But teaching is a little bit different.
Yeah.
So
and so you have now, and that's your ministry now. Kind of segue and tell us about what you're doing now.
At Creation Training Initiative, which has started a little over 13 years ago.
Wow.
What we do is we have one-day training courses. Our goal, our mission, is train others how to speak and teach on biblical creation and apologetics so they, in turn, can teach the next generation.
Okay.
It's called discipleship. What a wonderful idea. Take it right from the
Bible. Where did you get that word?
real discipleship. So what we do is we go around and do seminars, talk in churches and do Sunday sermons.
You're focusing on people who are going to be teaching or right. want to teach.
Right.
All right. Right.
But I do a lot of youth groups around the country. Matter of fact, I've done state homeschool conventions.
Okay.
I do a lot of those and they'll give me the youth. So we do those, but we have 1 day classes where we actually go to your location and do a 1 day class. A 1 day class is going like 8:30 to 5:30. We don't charge much for these classes. So 8:30 to 5:30. And we have one class called basic creation training for teens and up. So we get 13-year-olds, 14, so they can handle this stuff.
That's great.
And we teach it at people's level.
Okay. Great.
Then we have 1 day advanced and we have an actual teacher training 1 day class.
And that's for like a Christian school teachers, Sunday school teachers, even probably preachers who want to learn how to teach better, or
college age and above. And we've had some high school students in there who just want to learn, but maybe they want to be a teacher and they want to learn, how do you really teach? And in there, what we talk about is educating for success. How to get your students to retain the information when you're teaching. We talk about all these measurement techniques that's different from what the world does.
Right.
We take the anxiety off of all this testing. By the time you get to the real test, it's easy. So we use a lot of methods in there that are not taught in the education colleges.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned a lot of these with experimenting and doing research at Microsoft.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that's great. So do you have any of those coming up in 2025?
Yes, we do. Events? We have our first one's really in March. We have other events going on between there and then. But in March, I'll be doing down in Albuquerque the teacher training class called Dynamics of Christian Education. That's on a Friday. Then on Saturday, I'll be doing an Apologetics for the 21st Century, which covers the entire woke agenda and how we got in the position we're in today.
Oh, wow. That's fantastic. Yes. And so if anybody listening wants to learn more about what you're doing, your ministry's name is Creation Training Initiative. Is that correct?
Yes.
And what is your website?
Website is really Creation Training, all one word, creationtraining.org.
Creationtraining.org. And when I post this, I'll put those links up for everybody to take a look at.
They can see all our courses and outlines of all our courses, and all we need is an invitation to come. We'll come to your location.
Okay, so you'll come to a church or a Christian school or Christian university, whatever the need is, an apologetics group, youth group, whatever. They can reach out to you and find out how you can help them. Well, that's great. Now, you brought up Christian education, and I know that's really your passion. How would you define Christian education? When I think of education, like many people, I think of a public school or university. But when you say Christian education, what are you really talking about there?
Yeah, there should be. I'm going to say there should be a difference between a Christian education and a secular education. A lot of times there isn't much difference. There's a little gray area difference, not much. Excuse me. Just reading scripture before a class starts is a nice thing, good thing to do, but it's not a Christian education.
Right.
See, Christian education is what we call life-changing.
Right.
We're talking about eternal matters. When you get done a Christian education, you should have a biblical worldview, solid biblical worldview. You should be able to present and defend the gospel of Jesus Christ, and you should be able to defend his word. That's what's not happening in Christian education or in our churches today.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's the part that's missing. Our Christian universities and many of our Christian schools have really focused on the academia side of the world and forgot what Christianity is supposed to be.
And I know that firsthand.
Yes,
they really have. Now, you said, so someone's a biblical worldview. Let's talk about biblical worldview for a moment. So, someone would say, well, look, I believe that Jesus was the Son of God. I believe there's only one God. I believe the Bible. I believe there's a heaven and there's a hell. There's eternal life and eternal damnation. Don't I have a biblical worldview? Do you see that as a biblical worldview? What do you see missing there that's important, and why?
There are some missing things there. And I've looked at a lot of definitions of, well, let's say not definitions, but so-called definitions of a biblical worldview. A lot of them will say we're looking through biblical worldview glasses. That doesn't tell me anything. That allows heretics, false teachers, to have a biblical worldview. It's how they interpret the Bible.
Okay.
So
all right.
Biblical worldview to us has to be based on biblical doctrines.
Okay.
What biblical doctrines are essential in order to have what we call a biblical worldview. That are in other words, these are non-negotiable biblical doctrines.
And I know you've developed a list of them. What are some of them that would be in, that most or many Christians wouldn't think of that would be different? Okay.
Well, you named some of them, that Jesus Christ is both is Son of God. He's both man, fully man and fully God at the same time. There's only one way to heaven. There's a literal heaven. There's a literal hell.
Right.
But
which kicks a lot of people out these days, believe it or not. Right.
Yes, it sure does. And so we cover those and we cover things like, which leaves a lot of people out. And this is an important one. People don't say this, Morton, that God really did create in 6 days.
All right. And so why do you see that? Because a lot of people would say side issue, you know, not if I don't believe that I still can go to heaven. So what is your thinking there? What's the argument?
Well, here's the problem with that. And this is, again, that was a good comeback here because a lot of people say, oh, it's a secondary doctrine. My first response is, what's the difference between a primary and secondary doctrine? That's the apologetics point, critical thinking skills. Because they don't know. I've not run into many people that know the difference. So how do they know it's a secondary doctrine? It's their own personal
opinion. Right. That's just arbitrary. It's something they've heard.
But here's why it's important. Because I do a lot of teaching on this, theological issues in the old earth, why the age of the earth makes a difference. Number one, it's foundational to understanding the gospel of Jesus Christ. That is the entire foundation for why Jesus Christ had to come, suffer and die on a cross, be buried and raised from the dead, conquer death there.
Right.
If you don't believe in a six-day creation, you don't have a good explanation for why Jesus had to come.
All right. So stop right there and give our listeners a little bit better understanding of why. I agree with you, of course, but why?
Okay. Let me, is it okay if I take a literal view of the Bible right now? Sure it is. Yeah. Cool. I always have to ask permission. They never know. The Bible starts off with God created everything in 6 days.
Okay, right.
And at the end of the sixth day, he called his creation very good. Then comes day six comes Adam and Eve. Then after that comes the fall. Then comes death. That is the exact order the Bible reads.
Right.
Didn't take anything into account. But once we add millions of years, it doesn't matter whether it's the gap theory, the day age theory, framework hypothesis, or any of those other ideas. It doesn't matter. They all have the same problems. Once I add millions of years, here's what happens. God's creation is going on for millions and millions of years, these long days, long ages. Finally along come Adam and Eve. Then comes the fall. Question is, what was going on for those millions of years before Adam and Eve and the fall? It's called the fossil record, a record of dead things.
Dead,
so millions of years, no matter how you put it in, always teaches death before sin, which undermines the entire gospel of Jesus Christ.
Very good. Yes, absolutely. That's good. And of course, you know, I believe that. I want you to be able to say it with all of your expertise and your experience.
Can I add a few more in there too?
Go ahead.
Deals with the character of God. You know, in Genesis 1:31, God called everything very good, which means exceedingly good or perfect. If we have millions of years, God just called death, disease, decay very good.
All that good. And then you have to do what a lot of Christians have to do there is they have to explain how death is good.
Yes.
And you get into just this mental rat's nest of saying that it's good. You know, I remember one time reading a book by someone who was defending it and saying death was good because of all the good that can come out of it, all the things that we create from a medical standpoint and the medicines. And then I remember not long after that reading about the war in Iraq, how the army had progressed so much further on reconstructive surgeries because of all the men and women that had had their faces blown apart in Iraq. And I'm thinking, so it's good that you had your face blown apart because we can figure out how to put your face back together.
Yes.
You know, that is a crazy, ridiculous argument. What if we just never had anybody get their face blown off? Wouldn't that be better all around? And so you end up with people making crazy arguments like that.
Plus in 1 Corinthians, it says the last enemy is death. So death is an enemy to God's creation.
Right.
We have a real problem right there.
So if it happened before Adam and Eve, then God created a world in which his enemy death already existed.
Yes.
So that's another illogical.
No, it isn't. And there's many more issues with old earth and ages like that.
Right. So when you say old earth and theistic evolution, day age, these are all ways that Christians have tried to basically take the theory of evolution and fit it in to the Bible so that they can believe evolution and the Bible at the same time.
But it really only
works if you pay no attention to the context of the Bible and you don't pay any attention to these doctrines like the ones you're talking about and these other texts that talk about death and suffering and the fall and so on. It doesn't work when you really look at it. You have to kind of stand back at a distance and not pay attention to the details. Would you say that's fair?
Yes, I would say, and that's an area where we have failed to teach our next generation on these issues.
Yep.
We leave it on. Some of these Christian high schools say, oh, we're going to teach all the different views, and it's up to you to make up your mind.
What? Yeah. I know. Can you believe that? What a dereliction, a criminal dereliction of duty.
Yes, it is. Let's
transition on this point right now when you're talking about the next generation not knowing these things. What role do you think the pulpits have played in the last 50 years in most of our people, even the aged, you know, even people my age and older don't know, and they've been going to church for 50 years. What role do you think the pulpit has played in that?
Okay, I want to start off with, there are some good pastors out there doing a good job. There really are. But the majority of them have never been on the battlefield. They do not know how to address this. When evolution really got popular, starting getting popular in the 30s, 40s, and 50s, the church let it go. They did not address the issue.
Mm-hmm.
And we're having the same thing today. Because they did not address that issue, you know, here's the importance of the evolution. See, this is one of the things we have in our courses. In order to sell evolution, they had to have an old earth, because evolution can't work in a young earth situation.
Right, yeah. You got to have what they call geologic time. Yeah.
Because they came up with these things called radiometric dating methods, how they date rocks and fossils. And then they equated that to exact science, which it is not.
Right.
But everybody got hoodwinked, that's an old term there, and got deceived and fell for the long ages, and that made it much easier to sell evolution. Now, the meaning of evolution is we do away with the creator God. So once we do with the creator God, who becomes God or who's in charge, we are, that opened it up the entire woke agenda, LGBTQ, climate change, and all those.
Right. It's
church out of that soil. Address the issues. It's not political. It's evil. And we're supposed to address evil. Every one of those directly goes against God's word, and they should be and must be addressed from the pulpit, not in a light matter, but in a very serious manner.
Right.
Why,
absolutely. I agree with you. Why do you think, in my own experience in 27 years in the kingdom, 27 years saved, right away, I started to realize how important these subjects were, not necessarily because of what I believed, because I, like you, the Bible captured me right away. And I paid attention to context early on. Mm-hmm. If you don't pay attention to context, and then the words don't mean anything. You can make them mean whatever you want them to mean.
Yes.
But it was when I started to talk to lost people, and every one of those people had a question. I don't believe God exists. And how about dinosaurs? And what about all the other world religions? And what about all the errors in the Bible? I mean, it's just, you got about 10 or 12 that I found just talking to lost people that always came up.
Yes.
But why don't today's preachers talk about these things? I haven't heard anybody outside of a seminar, outside of going to see an event from you or, you know, Answers in Genesis or whoever else, or myself taking on the subject, preaching and teaching it. I am dead serious. I have never heard a preacher in a church that I was attending address anything significant like this in any kind of fundamental way, other than maybe a side comment. And that's in 27 years. Why do you think they don't talk about these things?
Well, one, they're not trained, they're not equipped, and they're in fear. They're not trained because our seminaries are not doing their job. Matter of fact, our seminaries can be a dangerous place to go. We have too many going into there believing the Bible, coming out not believing the Bible. And it's right. mostly academia anyway. Another one is they haven't taken the time to really get on the battlefield and investigate from themselves what's going on and what is happening to this next generation because of this.
So why there, though? Why have they not investigated it?
It's called laziness and fear.
Yes, yes. I think that's starts to get at it. But you go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, for instance, they may have, I've heard this too often, seen this too often. Well, I have some scientists in my congregation, and if I teach on it, they're going to come after me.
Okay, so fear they're going to offend someone.
Yes, okay. And the money issue. People may not like it if I take a six-day creation standpoint and go against evolution. They could lose part of their congregation. Yep. Well, who are they serving at that point?
That's right. Certainly that's right. God. Yeah. I think that you're hitting all the right answers there. Not that I'm evaluating you, but I agree with you on all those points. That's what I've seen. You know, it's so in my case, take my case, for example, I went to a seminary. You know, I went to a Bible college and a seminary. They didn't talk about any of this stuff, but I still saw what was going on and learned it myself. I mean, I'm self-taught in these things, learned from you, from other people, reading books, doing research. So to me, the issue of you know, nobody else has taught me this, nobody else has helped me, it only goes so far. You know, you're yes. a grown man, you're a man of God, you're supposed to be paying attention to what's going on. And in Jude chapter 1, he said, you know, I found it more needful to talk about these things than these things. And so I find it to be really a dereliction of duty. I think it's kingdom building. They're building their own kingdom. You know, it's like the parable Jesus told where the landowner, he gives resources and he goes away and then he comes back and sends his servants to try and get some fruit from his resources. And they're like, no, we like this. This is ours now. And I feel like the preachers are that way too. It's just my kingdom, my church, my job, you know. I think it's a dereliction of duty. Go ahead. What's that?
And this comes out in the surveys and statistics. One survey went out and asked pastors, how good of a job do you think you're doing, especially like the youth and education?
Oh.
80% of them said they're doing a good job. But the statistics show absolutely wrong. So we've deceived ourselves into believing they're doing a good job.
I agree.
Satan is really good at this deception business.
Yes, yes. So, and I think we've got I don't know how you feel about this, but I think there are a lot of preachers who are simply apostate. You know, they don't realize it, but they're actually apostate. And then I think you have good men who don't get it. You know, good men. I'm confused as to how, like, I've engaged preachers on this for years, and sound in every other way, but cannot, no matter how much I talk, no matter how much I explain, no how much I push, no how many statistics I give them, it's like they refuse to see anything but what they've always done and always thought. And though their preaching is the same as it was 20 years ago, the content is the same 20 years ago, they're not addressing anything else. It is astonishing to me how blind even good men can be on these kind of subjects.
Yes. And again, they're good men. They just, again, have never had anybody take them by the hand and say, listen.
Yeah, yeah.
But one of the things we like to focus on is, what's the solution?
Right.
I like solutions. What can we do? What's our opportunity? We have a lot of opportunity out there. See, God's given us all the tools. We have his word. We own all the signs. What we don't have are enough trained teachers to start training the next generation. We're missing that. We don't have that solid for training out there. So what can be done? Well, that's one of the things we're trying to do. We're just a small ministry now. We're a small ministry. But we're making a big effect because what we're trying to do is train others to go out there and teach and speak. To us, training others how to speak and teach will reach more of the next generation than us trying to do it ourselves. So there is something that can be done. And one of the things I tell them, we've got to get our youth out of the public schools. But wait a minute, we can't stop there. When we say get them out of public schools, where are they going to go?
Yeah, that's just the first step.
Yes, that's the first step. And this is where the churches have to do something they're not doing, absolutely not doing, coming together in unity. Without sacrificing biblical doctrine, coming together in unity, and this is what needs to be done. See, we send our church members all over the world as missionaries, but we miss the biggest mission field in this country. It's called the next generation.
Yeah,
they completely forgot about it. Because the people they're hiring to train our youth, well, there are some good ones. I've met some good ones. Most of them are not equipped to do the job. They're just fresh out of university, have not been trained in any of these areas, haven't been trained in speaking and teaching skills. For instance.
So when you say the churches come together in unity, what do you mean? They come together to create a Christian school that teaches these? What do they come together to do?
Well, the main thing we're looking to come together is do this, that they can still keep their autonomy here. They can be their individual churches, do their preaching on Sundays. But all this takes financing. And if we start taking some of the money that we're getting from the churches and pull it into Christian schools that do not compromise God's word. If they're compromising God's word, don't give them a penny. But Christian schools that are sound doctrine, that they believe in 6-day creation, they believe in heaven, hell, they believe there's only one way, they hold to the gospel of Jesus Christ all the way through there.
All right.
And then, see, we need good Christian schools, which require good teachers. We got to pay these teachers. Then here's the next step people haven't thought of. We have homeschool, but we also have some homeschool co-ops, and they're kind of loose here and there. And so mostly all volunteers. But they can be a valuable tool because not every parent knows how to teach mathematics or science or English.
Yeah.
This is where the co-ops can come in as a cheaper alternative. But we need trained teachers that know how to teach, not train them in their subject area, but train to make sure they're biblically sound and they train them on how to educate for success, which is different from what you get from education colleges.
Right.
Very different. Train them how to do that and pay them a little bit of money. Now we have the Christian schools that are sound. We have co-ops that you can send your children to for maybe a day or two during a week and homeschool and the rest. Now we have places to go. So in other words, start the churches putting the money where their mouth is or where they preach.
I like those ideas, the pooling of resources, homeschools too. One of the things that I thought as you were talking was, there are some apologetics curricula, but you know, you usually get some good stuff in that curricula and some bad stuff. And a lot of times I find apologetic teachers books, they're all too high, too many big words, too complex, you know, so it needs to be, I think we could help the homeschool families if we had a better thought out, more biblical homeschool curricula as well. Because a lot of homeschoolers, I mean, we homeschooled all of ours, you know that. They don't want interference. It's like, hey, the reason that we pull them out is because we want to control this, you know. And so a lot of them use co-ops, and some of them are just like, well, co-ops aren't our thing. But yeah, that multi-layered approach would be great. I just you know, Mike, in my experience, I don't see churches working together very much.
That's the problem. We don't see it either.
Your ideas are fantastic.
But we're working on something new. I can't announce it yet. But I'm working with a Christian university who's on board with this concept of an online program.
Yeah.
That instead of taking years to do, we could offer a certificate in apologetics along with the teaching skills and have people out. It would be about a year's time. Well-trained online.
Okay.
Applicant. Great. And when I say well-trained, I'm not talking just hearing and writing things on paper. Right. We do application level training where they have to demonstrate they can verbally respond to these things. So we're working on that idea. Then next year in July, we're doing something we've been told you can't do this, Mike. Won't work. I like that. You don't tell a Marine something won't work. I haven't told that before. But next year, we're going to be holding a Christian apologetics training camp for high school students.
Oh, that's fantastic.
We're going to hold the first one here in Boise. This camp, it's not that we're going to be out in the wilderness, because you know what? This is why they don't like it, because there's going to be no games and no entertainment. It's going to be straight
serious.
Teaching.
Yeah, right. 8:30
to 6. And what I have found out in all my experiences, and I'm old, I've got a lot of experiences. Pretty soon I'll be able to say I've been around the block once, haven't been there yet. We've got a lot of things
to learn. That's a long block, man.
Yes. But they will rise to the occasion.
Yes.
We're dumbing things down too much in the church.
I preach
it. They will rise to the occasion. Amen. And the goal is to turn these, well, it can only take 60 youth, 60 high school students, because there's going to be a lot of practice in there, because they have to verbally know how to respond to these challenges. Some of the toughest ones, like you mentioned, prove to me God exists.
Yeah.
How do you fit dinosaurs? Where do they fit into the Bible? How can God be good when he allows so many bad things to happen? Why does God send people to hell?
Huge one. And, yeah.
Carbon 14 dating, all this high schoolers can understand. They have to know how to teach it. What do they need to know? And that's what our team is putting together. The first one will be July next year, just for the Boise area.
July 2025?
Yep. And then after that, we want to take it around the country to other cities who really want to do this. We only want the serious students. We don't take any. If you're not serious, you might as well go home.
That's right. That's
60 high schoolers that will stick with us. And when they're done, they'll be very good apologists, and they'll know how to evangelize their peers, because we're going to teach them on evangelism.
That's great. That's great.
4.5 days, power packed.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Well, we'll all pray for you, and everyone listening to this, I'm sure, will pray for that. Let's take a few minutes here, and let folks benefit from some of your wisdom. I'm going to ask you some apologetics questions on the line of creation, and just give me a 2-minute answer on this subject that a typical Christian could understand, you know, if you could. So, and these are all things that you've taught me before. I know how well you know these subjects, and they've always meant a lot to me. So let's ask this question. Can life come from the primordial soup?
Okay. That's
why?
Okay. Generated on its own just by random chance series of accidents. That's what we're saying, a pool of chemicals. Well, there's several serious scientific issues. The biggest issue is, no, God created all life. But the serious issue scientifically is, number one, is life cannot start in the presence of oxygen. There's a problem, because oxygen destroys chemical bonds unless there's some protection around it. But there'd be no protection to start with in that living cell.
So we're talking about billions of years ago on the Earth. Yes. If there's oxygen present in that primordial soup, it breaks down the bonds, so it couldn't get started anyway.
Right. And here's another one. If there's no oxygen in the atmosphere, life can't start, because it means we have no ozone. That means ultraviolet rays of the sun come down and fry everything. So with no oxygen, life cannot start. So the next step is, they claim it started way down deep in the oceans. Big problem with that. Can I use a big word here?
Yes, please.
Okay. It's a word called hydrolysis. Hydro means water. Hydrolysis literally means water splitting. At the chemical level, water destroys chemical bonds.
Okay.
So as soon as, and the building blocks of life, here's what we have. We have things called atoms, which can make molecules. Molecules bond together to make amino acids, and amino acids bond together to make proteins. At the molecular level, water destroys amino acid bonds. So same as amino acids got together, within weeks, they'd all been destroyed in the oceans, which doesn't work.
Wow. All right, so let's stop right there. Let's stop right there. That is fantastic. So if that 13, 14 billion years ago, whatever they say that they think it was, if there's oxygen, we can't have life. If there's not oxygen, we have no ozone and UV rays, which kills the life. And then if we put it deep in the ocean, we have water, which breaks down the bonds. So life cannot, literally, scientifically cannot start in the situation that they describe to us in the evolutionary textbooks.
Right. And there's even more serious issues than those we don't need to go into right now.
Right. Take that's what I want to crystallize this for everybody.
But
All right. Let me ask you another one. I'm sorry. I'd love to
go
get
right
you. Everything you've got on everything, but just for time's sake here. Someone says, Mike, but I don't see dinosaurs in the Bible. Where are the dinosaurs in the Bible? How does the Bible explain dinosaurs?
Okay, I like that one. And I'm going to use what's called a biblical approach to this to start with.
Okay.
On day six, God created everything in 6 days. On day six, he created the land animals, which included the dinosaurs, and Adam and Eve, man. So Bible says in Genesis 1, man and dinosaurs lived at the same time.
So you're taking the land animals to be the dinosaurs, and technically dinosaurs are only land dwelling, right?
Those
in the sea are called something else. Is that
sea
correct?
Monsters. They're called sea monsters.
Okay. All right. Go ahead.
That's the word monster in there. And so we have man and dinosaurs living at the same time. Now there's a pretty good description, as I always say, a pretty good description of a dinosaur creature like an apatosaurus in Job chapter 40.
Yep.
So now here's what I'm going to do. And we say, now that I've given you an explanation where the dinosaurs came from, could you, using only empirical science, tell me where the dinosaurs came from? You know what? They can't do that. Non-believers cannot. Here's why.
Give us some detail on that.
You look at all these tree of life charts,
mm-hmm.
and they have dinosaurs in there, but nothing leading up to the dinosaurs.
The transitional forms.
Right. No. And you
haven't found any. Okay. They assumed them, but they have not found them.
They have about four or five alleged transitions. Looking at very closely, guess what they look like? Dinosaurs. I want to see all the hundreds and hundreds of transitions that led up to the dinosaurs. They're not found in any museums, any textbooks, anywhere.
So it's all an assumption. I don't want to be pejorative and say it's all made up. It's a joke, but it's creates imagined because they haven't found the actual physical transitional forms. So where are the dinosaurs now then, Mike? Why don't we have them?
Well, they went on the ark and they came off the ark. No, wait a minute, Mike, they're too big. I know some got pretty big, but nowhere in the Bible does it say God brought the grandma and grandpa dinosaurs to the ark. See, the largest dinosaur egg is just about the size of a football. It means they all had to start small and then grow.
Right.
Just bring the young dinosaurs on the ark, young giraffes, young elephants.
How do you know that they were on the ark, Mike? How do you know the dinosaurs are on the ark?
The ark, because God brought everything, land-breathing creature with the breath of life in there.
Okay.
And that
by definition would be a dinosaur.
Yes, it would be. They went on the ark. They came off the ark. As far as we know, watch how I say this. As far as we know, they're all extinct now. How did that happen? Well, the world was different afterwards. Maybe they died of natural causes. People may have killed them. Other creatures may have killed them off.
Yeah. Just like anything else becomes extinct today, they would have become distinct in the same processes.
But as far as we know,
disasters or whatever. But there are some things that are found that they go, oh, wow, living dinosaur.
We got to be careful there because the reptiles today are not dinosaurs. Now, dinosaurs were reptiles, but the reptiles today are not dinosaurs. Why? There's an anatomical difference between reptiles today and dinosaurs. Dinosaurs had their legs directly underneath their body.
Okay.
Reptiles today have their legs go out and down. Because of that difference, we don't refer to them as dinosaurs.
Great. That's fantastic. And I did not know that. Thank you for teaching me that. All right. Let's stop there on that one. All right. Let's see here. Talk to me about fuzzy words. You and your teaching, you talk about fuzzy words that are used in evolutionary textbooks and evolutionary teaching and how help people understand what they are and how to spot them and why they're important to spot.
Yes, we have a whole section we teach. So this is one of my most popular talks, too, and I keep expanding it. It's called Critical Thinking Skills and Tactics. Learn to ask good questions and learn how to read between the lines. And that's where this idea of fuzzy words comes in.
Okay.
I believe, we think, could have, should have. My opinion is.
Those are some words, examples. I believe, could have, should have, may have.
Yes.
Those are fuzzy words. All right.
Why are they fuzzy? Because what they're doing is they're saying, we don't have the observable evidence. Just trust us. Now, there's nothing wrong with directly using those terms, but you need to qualify what you mean by it.
Okay.
And we find these words in school textbooks and all in the news media. It's just basically saying, we don't have the evidence. Just believe it.
Yes. And so they're kind of interpolating. They're taking something they have today and they're trying to tell a story with it and connect it to something in the past that they haven't directly seen or been able to measure. So could have or would have or probably did or most likely. When you hear those terms, you know that's telling you they have not seen that. They're, for lack of a better term, guessing.
Yes.
And we should not take as gospel truth, if you pardon the pun, when somebody starts using those terms, that means they don't know. And a lot of times in the future, they'll change their ideas, won't they, Mike?
Yes.
They'll say, we thought this, but now we think this.
Yes. When we get high school and junior high students, they love hearing that. They'll never read anything the same again after that.
It's so true. So true. I'm the same. You taught me that. You've taught me those. All right. Let's stop on that one. Related. I believe this is a related concept, but you've also taught me a lot about there are three questions that you ask. One of them is, how do you know that? So I'm not trying to take your stage here, but the questions that you ask to see if someone really knows what they're talking about, if it's a legitimate fact or evidence, that kind of thing. Talk about the three questions that you like to ask.
Yes, three critical thinking questions. Number one, has it ever been observed? That's a killer devolution right there.
Yes.
And are you making any assumptions?
Making any assumptions. All right, stop right there. Talk to us about assumptions. What do you mean by that?
Assumptions. That's giving evidence that we don't know for sure. In other words, assumptions, let's say I want to date this rock, and that's where big assumptions come in. And we make certain assumptions when that rock was first formed that there's certain elements in it.
Okay.
But if these rocks are millions of years old, was anybody there ever to observe that rock when it formed?
Right.
So we assume that it was had these conditions in it when it formed.
We assume that the decay rates are the same, for example, in that same illustration. We assume that the speed of light's always been the same.
And we assume light started by itself.
We assume. So all these are assumptions. So you're asking them, and most people who believe evolution don't recognize that they're assuming these things. They think they're facts, but they're really not. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Excellent.
So has it ever been observed? Are you making assumptions? Then how do you know it's true? So you build your case, then hit them with the big whammy question. How do you know it's true? And the only answer they can really give is because it's their only option. So they've ruled out God as greater. So the only alternative then is evolution.
Right. And so it's a worldview. It's a belief system.
Yes,
and they don't recognize it as that. I mean, really, it's hard to get through to them a lot of times. You just have to make those points and let it sit and hope that the Holy Spirit uses it. But they think all their stuff is facts and all of our stuff is faith. But it's really not true.
Here's what's killing us. They make a pretty good case in high schools and colleges where our students aren't well equipped for it.
Right.
You got what's the last part? Our kids, our youth are not equipped for it. So they make a very good case for what they believe. Why is that happening? Why are our youth not equipped?
Right. Yeah. And I take you back to the pulpits, Mike.
Yes.
I take you back to the pulpits, and then the pulpits produce the youth pastors, you know, and the pulpits guys, you know, teaching the seminaries, a lot of them. All right. So that's enough questions. Awesome. Thank you so much. I'd like to hit a couple of recent events, current event type, get your feedback, get your thoughts. First is give me some feedback. Give me your thoughts on the recent national election in the United States, the election of Donald Trump, what you think about that big picture for the faith, for, you know, woke policies, for Christian persecution. Just kind of give us a biblical world, but Mike's look at this, spiritual look at this.
Okay, let me lay the foundation first. Jesus Christ is our Savior. Donald Trump is our president. Big difference.
Okay. Yes, yes. Very
Make
good.
Sure we get that distinction there. In other words, Trump is not our savior. he's got his issues there, but he's the right man for the job at the right time.
In what sense?
God has used that all the way through history. He's used people who weren't, nobody's perfect, but he's used people that have made wrong decisions, but they were there for the right time. Winston Churchill was the right man for the time in World War II.
Why do you think Trump is? What's your thinking there? Give us some detail.
I think Trump is the right person right now because number one, he's putting values back into our politics, which were completely gone.
What values do you see there?
Religious freedom, morality, especially morality. Our country is about the bottom of the pits morally right now with the LGBT community, crime rates going where criminals are getting away with it, and the person trying to defend themselves goes to jail.
Yeah.
Everything's been twisted around. But I think he will turn some of that around. He will allow us to have religious freedom. He will allow Christian schools to continue to teach. Those are going to be major issues.
And have you seen in the last, during the Biden administration, and did you see that freedom start to be curtailed? And did you start to fear anything like that?
Because the National Education Association has been at war with homeschooling for quite a number of years.
Yeah.
They would love to put it out of business. And that would have happened fairly soon. And when I say fairly soon, it could have been a few years to maybe 10 years.
It's on
that
the way. Happened. Yeah.
Because there's no protection out there for it. Now that Trump's in there, he's going to try and get. Now, there's some things he doesn't understand here about the education.
Sure.
But I'd love to work with him on that and inform him with things like that and work
yes.
with him, especially on the Christian education side. But I think he's going to allow us to have our freedoms. He's going to, and I like this, he might put good education on food. Things are killing us. The vaccines. I noticed that they want to do a study on vaccinations and some diseases that are coming in.
Okay.
And that's, there's a strong correlation there, because it's not that all vaccinations necessarily are bad, but the way we do it in America, the number we give, and it keeps going up about every few years, is causing right. major problems.
Right. I like it that I'm seeing, and I agree with you. I think that we have to be thoughtful in how we evaluate.
Yes.
You know, in my opinion, politics has become an idol among many believers.
Yes.
And it's an idol akin to Dagon in the Old Testament, where God keeps knocking it down and breaking it apart, and we keep trying to put it back up. And I fear that people have put it back up now with an unbiblical, unhealthy view of who Trump is and what he's going yes. to do. You know, mm-hmm. in my view, God has shown us mercy in that the pressure that Biden, Obama, and the godless liberals have
yes.
placed on us as Christian, as true believers,
yes.
are being, I feel like I'm breathing a little bit now. I don't think yeah. my government is coming after me as much now, yeah. but it doesn't change the fact that all the churches, 90% of the churches are failing. It doesn't change the fact that 90% of the students, the young people leave the church after their 18th birthday, don't come back. You know, that the churches are approving and ordaining homosexuals. Churches are splitting over this issue. We don't have youth in the churches. None of that has changed. So we have to really be careful about how we think about these things. There.
You hit a key issue there. We have 4 years of opportunity facing us.
Yeah.
What will the churches do about it? My take on it, probably nothing, because they have their track record is
yeah.
do nothing.
Just that's my fear.
Hiding behind the pulpits. Mm-hmm.
And that's my fear, is that the people who are really worked up supporting Trump, the Christians who have been really worked up and supported Trump, and I support Trump, and I voted for Trump.
Yes.
All right. But I think I've got a distance between what I think he is and what other people might think he is. All right. But God's wrath is still on us.
Yes.
As evidenced by our situation. And I wonder if his mercy here is not going to be seen the wrong way. And like in the time of Judges, things will be a little bit better. And so everybody just goes, let's yep. just go back. Let's go to lunch. You know, everything's great. Let's go to lunch. And things like you're talking about in our interview today, it's not that big. Everything's fine now. You know, so that's my concern. No, go ahead.
And we want to make a difference in that. That's what your ministry is doing too. Also, we want to get out there and make a difference and get people trained and equipped. Whoever controls this generation controls the next generation of politicians. And we need to start now, today, training our youth.
Yeah. Right. Wake up. All right. Well, let's go ahead and end it there. Mike, so appreciate you coming on today. It's great to see you as always. And creationtraining.org.
Yes.
Creationtraining.org. All right. Great to see you, buddy.
God bless you.